Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes. For another week, we are looking back at the Australian Grand Prix, all the action there in Formula One, Supercars, MotoGP was also in action over the weekend, and much more. I am Naveen Jayarajasekar. I'm here with Joshua Carwalden. Josh, how's your week been? It's been pretty soggy so far in Brisbane.
Yeah, a pretty soggy week, if I'm honest. However, you know, motor racing as a whole, it's finally back, you know. Most, we're still waiting on the World Endurance Championship. However, most series and football codes and everything else is back in action. So 2017, you know, it really did begin as a whole last weekend. So yeah, definitely looking forward to the year ahead.
Yeah, if you hear a little bit of rain in the background, that's why. It's been pretty wet here in Brisbane where we are recording. So let's move on to the Australian Grand Prix, where it wasn't really wet at all. It was pretty much bone dry. The first race of this highly anticipated 2017 season, and it gave us a new winner. Sebastian Vettel took the Australian Grand Prix after a Mercedes strategy decision cost Lewis Hamilton. It was leading pretty comfortably. I mean, that's probably the big talking point. Mercedes have finally made a strategic mistake, and somehow Ferrari have managed to capitalize on it. It's pretty extraordinary, Josh.
Yeah, very extraordinary. Like, I mean, if we were talking about the Ferrari of 2016 with their strategy department, they would have, pit like straight the next lap, possibly even for Supersofts, which would have been a massive risk. Which I'm actually surprised only Red Bull elected to use the Supersofts for that final stint. I really would have thought that, given how long the Ultrasoft tyres lasted, that, you know, more teams would have the incentive to go on the Supersoft. But no, Mercedes and Ferrari for both their cars respectively, chose the soft tyres. And yeah, just, it was a really big mistake because, you know, of all the people you don't want to be stuck behind, on the F1 grid, you know, you're stuck behind Max Verstappen, you know, who doesn't care who you are. He's just out there racing and, you know, doesn't give a damn about the end result for anyone else except himself. So, yeah, just, let's not forget Mercedes have, like, I'd have to say about 20 to 30 supercomputers all working away and about 30 to 40, team personnel back in Brackley, as every race goes on, working on strategy, and I'm very dumbfounded about how no one counted in the Max Verstappen factor. Like, I mean, you know, this is, like, basic stuff. Like, I mean, most series around the world, you know, with the exception of NASCAR, because they don't use that technology, most series around the world have the technology to see where the car is going to be when it comes out of the pit lane. So, yeah, I was pretty surprised by that. Yes, I do understand that, Hamilton, certainly wasn't treating his tyres that well. However, with the new aero regs, they should have used the new regulations to their advantage and just stayed out there and basically just pushed Vettel, you know, basically back towards Bottas. So, you know, if there was the chance that Bottas was better on his tyres, he'd have a greater choice of winning the race and Hamilton backing him up. So they could have played it that way. However, you know, it's all said and done now, and Ferrari, they held strong. They maximized their advantage when Verstappen was behind Hamilton. They didn't overdo it and get too hungry and, you know, ultimately turn the advantage into a deficit and, you know, just came out and basically the race was won, when Vettel came out ahead of Verstappen.
Yeah, that was the big moment of the race. And yeah, Ferrari making a decent strategy call, although, to be honest, it wasn't too difficult. And this is something that I'm a little bit concerned about. How prevalent will these one-stop strategies be? I mean, Melbourne has generally been a two-stop track, but the tyres have gotten much harder this season. The fact that we saw Danny Kvyat manage to do more than half of the race on the ultra-soft tyre does seem to suggest that Pirelli might have possibly done it on this one, with these tyre and tyre degradation stuff. I said they weren't meeting targets. So I'm hoping that it's fixed. If not, we could see, I guess, it could be a bit like how it was 10 years ago, ironically, where if you chose the right decision at the right time, you just motored off into the distance. And that's pretty much how Ferrari won their last two championships. So that strategy probably isn't, too bad for them.
Yeah, for sure. And let's not forget, Pirelli actually came out, I think, in about December last year, saying that, basically saying, you know, if the racing is boring, don't blame us. Well, from everything we've seen so far, yes, it's good that the tyres last longer, but the drop-off rate just isn't good enough in terms of the overall show, because when we get to places like Mexico, Monaco, and Russia, it's going to be a lot of one-stops. And basically, I already know the strategy for Monaco. It's basically going to be ultra-soft for the top 10, and they're basically just super soft all the way to the end, like not using the soft tyre at all. Like, I mean, I think it's going to be pretty rare to actually see the soft tyre actually being used at places like Monaco, you know, later in the year, just because they're so durable and, like, there's just no actual benefit to actually using the soft tyre. However, the next race in China, that definitely won't be a one-stop. You know, we most likely will see two stops, you know, just being the general theme of the weekend, which is good and relieving in a way. I don't know what the tyre selections are for China at the moment. I think Pirelli might have been brave and chosen the ultra soft tyre for China. So we could see a little bit of a 2016 revival for this weekend. So, as Naveen said, we're going to see a lot of one-stop races this year. And, you know, if there is a loophole in the rules, we could potentially see no stops as well. Like, but that, you know, really depends on the rule book. And, like, I mean, we can definitely see Mercedes and Ferrari looking very closely at how that rule is worded to gain the maximum advantage out of that. So, yeah, in all honesty, you know, a lot of one stops this year. Thankfully, China will see two stops. I really doubt we'll see one stop unless a team decides to do super soft and then soft, the middle compound and then the hardest compound. So, yeah, it's really not going to be that good compared to 2016. But in all honesty, you know, it was basically one big checklist about who was concerned about this year's new regulations. You know, as even John Todd expressed his concerns on Saturday night, the night before the Australian Grand Prix, when he was at the CAM's celebration dinner. You know, even he said, you know, look, you know, I'm a bit concerned. I don't think there'll be that much overtaking, and he was right. As basically from this time last year to Saturday night, the night before the Grand Prix, it was basically one big checklist about who was concerned about the new regulations. And, you know, by the time, you know, the five lights went out at Melbourne last weekend, there weren't that many names left on the list that weren't unchecked about that were concerned about the new regulations.
Yeah, exactly. And with the tyres as well, we're only going to probably see more one-stops. If you look at the strategies, pretty much everybody pitted around the lap 20 mark. I think Lewis Hamilton jumped again 6 laps before Sebastian Vettel, got stuck behind Max Verstappen, and that ultimately caused him out. And yeah, that's my big concern, is that Pirelli might have possibly overcooked it, but we'll still have to wait and see, particularly because Albert Park is always a weird circuit when it comes to any sort of performance of these cars. It's sort of a difficult thing to benchmark the rest of the season on. So, yeah, Sebastian Vettel did take the win, 1 minute, hour, 24 minutes, the quickest Albert Park Grand Prix by record, mainly because there weren't any safety car stops and we only had one round of pit stops, so it just flew by. After that was Lewis Hamilton, he was 10 seconds off the pace, followed by Valtteri Bottas, who was another 11 seconds off him. Only 6 cars on the lead lap, which is a bit concerning. Although, given the fact that we didn't have any safety cars, as well as the fact that we were pretty much one-stopping, that's not entirely surprising. But it doesn't necessarily fare well for the rest of the season. Let's have a talk about the sole Australian on the grid who had a weekend he'd much rather forget, Daniel Ricciardo, who was on the Karma train all weekend, crashing out and qualifying. Then they had to replace the back end of their car with a pit lane penalty. Then he broke down in the warm-up. managing going two laps into the race and then broke down later on. He was just a weekend that he just will try and burn from his mind as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I'm actually pretty concerned for Daniel Ricciardo for the first half of this season, because we all know how it took a while for him to bounce back from the Monaco stuff up on Red Bull's part, and we can certainly see that the Australian Grand Prix will mean just as much to Ricciardo as the Monaco Grand Prix does. So I am a little concerned, you know, just about his morale heading into China, because you know if it is as far down as what it was after Monaco, then, you know, Max Verstappen, you know, very well could, you know, land quite a few deadly punches on Ricciardo in terms of the teammate rivalry for this year. So, yeah, I'm a little concerned about Ricciardo heading into China. China is a circuit that he did have bad luck again at last year with a tyre blowout. Basically very early in the piece as well. So, yeah, hopefully history doesn't repeat itself again for Daniel Ricciardo. Like, I mean, China's been an okay circuit for him apart from that. Like, I mean, he put in some pretty solid results when he was at Toro Rosso. And then, you know, whenever he got to Red Bull at China, you know, he's been, you know, just in the background, you know, just not really challenging. So he just needs a good weekend for himself and, you know, just to really get 2017 off to a solid start. But yeah, just anything that could go wrong did go wrong for Ricciardo. And, yeah, it really was just the weekend from hell. And, hopefully all the bad luck that he's due for this year has all been used up. At the Australian Grand Prix, as there's still 19 races to go. You know, the Red Bull is just not on the pace compared to Mercedes and Ferrari. I think it's just going to be a year where they just are stuck in fifth and sixth and third in the constructors. I just don't really see them winning that many races, if any, this year, as it's just, you know, it's just not a good package. Like, it's very well rounded, which is, you know, certainly much better than what it was 2 years ago when they had all those Renault engine dramas. However, you know, it's just not a good package. They just need to improve in every single area for them to be in with a chance of competing for Grand Prix wins with Mercedes and Ferrari week in, week out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're going to have to wait and see how they improve. Of course, Red Bull have been slow starters the last few years, particularly last year, but once they got their engine package in the car and ready to go, they were quite good from Canada onwards. But that's going to be a long wait till Canada, you'd have to say, for that package to come into fruition. And yeah, they're at the moment, they're sort of stuck in this weird, awkward position where they're pretty much too far from the front runners, but far enough from the midfielders where they're going to be just wrapping in the fifths and sixths. So that pretty much rounds up most of the top 10. It was Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, Kimi Raikkonen, Max Verstappen, and Felipe Massa all on the lead lap. Then Sergio Perez in the pink Force India in seventh place. Then Carlos Sainz and Danny Kvyat. Strong weekend from the Toro Rosso. They do look to be coming. They always come out of the block strong. And this weekend, a double points finish. They'll be very happy with that. Then we also had Esteban Ocon rounding out the Force Indias. And that's another thing. A good, solid debut performance from Esteban Ocon to pretty much follow his teammate into the top 10.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I really did love Ocon's move on Alonso and I think it was Hülkenberg in the Renault with him, you know, going three wide down the front straight. And also as well, going on the outside of the second to last corner at Albert Park. I don't think I've really seen anyone do that. Like, it's always been down the inside. So yeah, great move on his part, and you know it just confirms, you know, what we saw from preseason testing, that Ocon is a solid all-round driver that does the performances and, you know, just doesn't want to cause any drama for anyone. So yeah, I think we're going to see more of the same from Ocon for most of this year, and you know, once he's settled into Force India, by the time they get to Spain, yeah, we could potentially see Ocon matching Perez, as I do rate him pretty highly, actually. So, yeah, a very exciting year ahead for Ocon. And there's the big unanswered question that I want to pose to you, Naveen. Where are Haas in the pecking order? Because Grosjean was fantastic all weekend, got into sixth place in Q3. On the other side of the garage, Kevin Magnussen had a terrible weekend, even though he did set the pace and the fastest lap for Haas in pre-season testing in the first test when they went all out while all the other teams were sandbagging. I really did, just a side note, I really did like the way Haas approached pre-season testing, sandbagged in the second test compared to every other team sandbagging in the first test. Kevin Magnussen just had a terrible weekend and just was nowhere in qualifying and just, had a terrible race as well. So where are Haas in the pecking order?
Yeah, it's a difficult one for sure. I mean, first off, the one thing that I was a bit concerned about is the reliability of that Ferrari. Three Ferrari cars failed to finish ultimately. The main Ferrari cars were fine, but when you look at the customers, not too great. Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think they've got pace, and they did have pace last year, of course, as well. And I guess now they know how to maximize their qualifying performance more than they would have first race last year when they were happy to finish. Pretty much, they didn't even know where they'd ended up at the end of the race in the case of Romain Grosjean. But yeah, it's a difficult one to pitch at the moment. And also because Albert Park is a weird circuit, I guess because of the move towards the softer tyres, everyone's got, generally Haas have been good on the softer tyres, but because everyone's doing that, they've sort of been pulled back a little bit. So yeah, it's kind of difficult to see where they fit in their pecking order. Although if their reliability gets sorted out, I think they'll certainly be a solid finisher. Speaking of reliability, we do have to talk about McLaren Honda. An absolute shocker from then 13th for Stoffel Vandoorne, although that was hardly convincing. And Fernando Alonso was running pretty much up until the final laps of the race before deciding, yeah, I'm not going to bother finishing. It's not worth it. But they've really gone backwards. Fernando Alonso only just got into Q2. I think that was a good... He did a pretty good performance for most of the weekend to stay running in the end. But yeah, it's like they've gone backwards and Renault has gone backwards, which I don't think is what we were expecting from the sport. But it just shows that the pace that Ferrari and Mercedes have had with their development of their engines is just so far that the teams who are already on one back set back can't really close the gap.
No, and McLaren Honda, we basically talked about this in the Australian Grand Prix preview. They're a complete shambles at the moment. And the Alonso press conference on the Sunday night after the race, was just so brutal but so true at the same time. So, yeah, just I'm actually genuinely surprised that Vandoorne finished and Alonso got to lap 50. I genuinely believe that both of them would have been out before they reached the lap 40 mark. And, the only reason they got so far was purely because of, how low they ran their engines. Like, they basically just ran them in lean for the whole race and, was very gentle on the throttle. And, I don't think we've ever seen an F1 team go into such conserve mode, just to protect the engine and the car itself. I don't think we've ever seen that. Yes, for sure, we've seen bad teams in the past. HRT, and then back and all the way back into the turbo era, where the cars would just stop on the track because they run out of fuel. Like, even then, they'd still be pushing harder than McLaren Honda. And, it's the start of a very, 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 very long year for both Vandoorne and Alonso. But I think we can instantly guarantee that Alonso will not be at McLaren Honda next year. Like, there's no way he's going to be there. Like, he's either going to be in a top team. I think he'll even take a midfield team there's the outside chance he might retire. However, I do think he enjoys the cars but hates his own car, so I think he'll just look for a seat somewhere else, and I'm pretty sure that someone will definitely be interested in offering Alonso a one-year deal. And obviously that does throw into question who's going to replace him. And the favorite so far has to be, and this will be good to strengthen McLaren and Honda's relationship if they do indeed continue to 2018 at Matsushita, the Japanese Formula 2 driver who's been solid but needs better results compared to the guys he's competing against in Formula 2 this year. So that's another watch this space and very well could start the 2018 silly season.
Indeed. One thing that we saw from this race is that a very high level of attrition. Seven cars, one car failed to start, of course, and seven cars failed to finish. And that could be the trend. We could go back to these days of the 80s where you were lucky to have 10, 15 cars at the finish the race. That certainly seems to be this trend. Finally, though, I want to sort of get to probably the man who would be my driver of the day. It's Antonio Giovinazzi, who had one session in that car, replacing Pascal Wehrlein and in the Sauber. So he had one session, came out in qualifying, would have got to Q2 if he hadn't stuffed his lap up at the final corner, which is the most difficult one on the circuit. And then comes through, has a very solid race, much better than, of course, his teammate Marcus Ericsson, who decided to have a bit of a punting match with Kevin Magnussen down at the beach at Turn 3. But yeah, a very solid drive from him, and you'd have to say he is now starting to emerge as a front runner for that Ferrari seat next year. I think the bosses at Scuderia Ferrari would have been looking at him and saying, yeah, he's the guy who I think pretty much carried Sauber over the weekend, and he could be the guy to be a decent young driver to, with Sebastian Vettel, should Kimi Raikkonen not renew his contract at the end of the year, which we don't think will happen.
Yeah, and the only problem with that for Antonio Giovinazzi's case is that there's so many good drivers putting their hands up for the seat. Fernando Alonso would definitely not mind a return to Ferrari. What a lineup that would be, Vettel and Alonso at Ferrari. That's good news for Ferrari, terrible news for everyone else. So, yeah, but then again, I think Ferrari would definitely, be dreaming right now about Giovinazzi leading Ferrari to a future 1-2 finish at the Italian Grand Prix. And, I can just see already the Tifosi going absolutely bonkers on that podium. And, I think, any driver would love to be on that podium alongside Antonio when he lifts up that winner's trophy, because it would be an amazing feeling just to be up there and to see all the fans go all the way, basically all the way from the start of Parabolica all the way right the way through to about turn 3 or 4. It would be amazing, and I can't wait to see that. So hopefully that does happen, because what a sight that would be. Going back to the present, Giovinazzi, he's basically, I said this to you, Naveen, last weekend, Giovinazzi is writing his name down next to Gasly as, the two new debutants for 2018, most likely at this stage, for Red Bull, and question mark at, for Toro Rosso, I should say, for Gasly, and question mark for Giovinazzi right now, as he did everything right. He's never been to Albert Park before. He's probably never been to Australia before. And the best stat is he only did 28 laps before he started the Australian Grand Prix. So, yeah, just he did everything right. He brought the car home and just did everything that was required of him and some more. So, yeah. Giovinazzi, he's got a fantastic future ahead of him in Formula 1. And, realistically, even though he's not doing Formula 2 this year, he's still Ferrari's third driver. And you know you're doing something right when you're Ferrari's third driver. So he's going to get quite a lot of seat time in the 2018 cars this year, whether it's just going to be through mid-season testing or, it's almost definite that he's going to be at Abu Dhabi for the tyre test after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix in December. So, yeah, he's going to get a lot of seat time. And, he's most likely going to be on the grid in 2018 alongside Pierre Gasly. Yeah, they're just two very exciting drivers to watch this year, and no doubt they'll feature heavily in the silly season. In the silly season when we get to Monaco.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the scenes. Well, I would say now it's almost definite we could possibly see Antonio Giovinazzi running in a practice session at Italy for Ferrari. Mm. I mean, this is the first Italian driver since Jarno Trulli, which really shows
the big drought we've had. It would be a PR dream for Ferrari, and like that's just the situation that they find themselves in. Like, that's the bet. Like, I mean, you know, I don't really like teams, you know, choosing drivers of their nationalities are pretty average compared to all the other talents out there just because they're from the same country. However, in Ferrari and Giovinazzi's case, like, it's worked out brilliantly. Ferrari have a fantastic young driver from Italy at their disposal. And, you know, like, I mean, you know, as I just said, you know, it would be a PR dream for Giovinazzi, to be the test driver, at free practice one and two, at Italy, later in the year. So, yeah, that would be a fantastic announcement, for Ferrari's PR side, if that does happen, and, wouldn't be surprised if it actually does.
Hmm. So, the constructors' standings at the moment, Ferrari leads. When was the last time this had happened? 37 points ahead of Mercedes, who've got 33. Big gap between everybody else, though. Red Bull with 10. Williams with 8. Force India with 7. Toro Rosso with 6. Renault, Sauber, and McLaren Honda, the teams not to score, which really doesn't reflect well on McLaren Honda. But, yeah, do we have potential for a decent championship battle in the drivers or even the constructors for this year, Josh, because this is looking really promising at the moment? Well, we can't really read too much into it because Albert Park, yet again, a weird track, but how close it's been, and as well, the fact that Ferrari have really stepped up the game and Mercedes look a little bit off guard could really prove to make a successful champ, a really great, really competitive championship.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's going to be a fantastic championship battle, but not on the track. It's going to be basically, we're going to see a lot more of the strategic on track play that we saw with Sebastian Vettel. You know, just keeping, you know, around 1 second behind the car, behind Lewis. You know, he tried to overtake him within the first 15 laps, and within the regulations, you know, you just really can't pass. So, you know, he just held his ground and, you know, protected the tires. And, we're going to see a lot of that, which, you know, certainly will be, pretty tense, to watch, especially at a track like Abu Dhabi for the decider. So, yeah, Ferrari, like, I mean, you know, like, as I was watching the Australian Grand Prix, like, I mean, I was just saying to myself, this team looks dangerous. Like, they look like they're, you know, really sharp, really well rehearsed, really refined, and very, very fast. So, yeah, like, I do potentially see Sebastian Vettel winning, lifting up the championship trophy at the end of the year. So, yeah, like, it's all to play for. And, you know, it's also going to be very interesting to see what Raikkonen and Bottas do, because Bottas, he did a very solid weekend. You know, he just got into... you know, he just did the job at the Australian Grand Prix. He didn't do anything bad. You know, it's just going to take time for him to gel with the team, and once that happens, you know, he'll get the right setups that he wants, and then the car will just go faster. And Raikkonen had a problem with his tires all weekend. Like, I mean, you know, he just didn't get them right, or he's just not used to them. So, yeah, that's a bit of a watch it space, but that's all we got. That's the only explanation we got from Raikkonen's poor performance last weekend. But yeah, it'll be a fantastic battle to watch Lewis and Vettel, you know, slog it out throughout the 19 remaining Grand Prix this year.
Yeah, it should be very exciting. You're listening to the Melbourne Canes. The rain has just picked up a little bit, so apologies if you get a little bit of that in there. Hopefully doesn't send you to sleep more than usual. Let's move on now. The supercars are in action, and it was a pretty big weekend. we saw the end of effectively two droughts. We saw DJR's first victory as part of their new, as part of the new Team Penske lineup. And we also saw Chaz Mostert break his wind drought that had been sitting there since 2015. Ultimately, though, none of those things count the points, which is probably the cruel irony of it. But it looked very, very promising for DJR. Very dominant performance, winning three of the races. Coulthard took two. Scott McLaughlin, Coulthard took all three, I think. I think Scott McLaughlin was in there as well. Up at the top, the only race which they didn't win, of course, which was the last one, which has most it, was because Coulthard did get a puncture, which is something that was permeating the weekend. The soft tyres not entirely standing up to the loads that you see at Albert Park. But other than that, a very good weekend for DJR Team Penske, and the champagne will have been flowing at their headquarters after this big win.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not the official breakthrough win that we've, you know, been waiting for ever since they got in. However, it's good enough at the moment for DJR Team Penske just to get that form up. And also as well, let's not forget the last two winners of the non-championship event at Albert Park have actually gone on to win the championship. So it's very much a momentum round when you think about it. As last year, Ben Gisbergen, he was very dominant there last year. And then the year before, Mark Winterbottom was very fast as well in the FGX in its first year. So, yeah, and I think, we should be expecting more of this because, the FGX has always been fantastic on softer tyres compared to the VF Commodore and the Nissan Altima. So, yeah, just a fantastic weekend for DJR Team Penske, and they'll be full of confidence heading into Simmons Plains, which ultimately will be the decider about, their championship credentials, because if they do well and, win one, if not two races, then they're definite championship contenders. Coulthard and McLaughlin are both championship contenders. But, if they're just, behind Triple Eight and just scoring top tens, it just might be another rebuilding year in preparation for a full championship assault in 2018, depending on what their package is, of course, with Gen 2 coming in. So, yeah, very promising right now from DJR Team Penske. And the prospect of Van Gisbergen versus Wincup versus McLaughlin versus Coulthard is a very juicy one to have a four-way championship fight, as Craig Lowndes just isn't on form at the moment. And, realistically, I think it would be best for Craig to just move elsewhere for 2018. Like he has said that, if Triple Eight offer him a full-time drive, even if it's 1 year contract next year, he said he's going to take it. So, yeah, I honestly don't think that's the best for Craig to stay at Triple Eight. I think, realistically, he just needs to find a new home. But, going back to Team Penske, it's all up to Simmons Plains. Simmons Plains is going to be the track that decides whether or not they are really contenders or whether they're just pretenders. So yeah, big weekend coming up for DJR Team Penske next weekend, and Chaz Mostert as well. He's really in form at the moment. He was pretty solid along with Cam Waters at the Clipsal 500, he's continuing, and Cam Waters is continuing to put Mark Winterbottom to shame, who was once again just nowhere last weekend.
And that will be the thing to watch. So, first race, of course, it was a Ford Falcon FGX clean sweep. Scott McLaughlin leading over Fabian Coulthard, and then we had Chaz Mostert in third position. Second race, it was another strong result for the Shell V-Power team. Fabian Coulthard leading over Scott McLaughlin. Marco Caruso, though, good performance from the Altima to get up into third position. And, of course, that was the race where we saw Shane Magisberger taken out by James turned around by Chaz Mostert and finished off by James Moffat at that final quarter. Coulthard took the third race, although Jamie Wincup managed to get his performance up and get on the podium, which will be a good performance for him. Fabian Coulthard topping the in P1. Scott McLaughlin, though, continuing DJR strong form in P3. And the final race, once I get to it, Mostert took the win, followed home by Shane Van Gisbergen in the Triple Eight Commodore, and Tim Slade in the Freightliner Racing entry. Another strong result from him. Of course, probably the biggest moment of action was, of course, that huge crash at the end of race one. Nick Percat having a very scary brake failure at the top end of heading into turn one, going into the back of Lee Holdsworth, wiping out that teammate in Commodore. Very lucky not to be any further up on the car. If not, it would have been similar to what happened with James Courtney a few years ago, and even further up, what happened to Lee Holdsworth last year at Darwin. So a close escape, but still there's been a lot of work that's going to have to be done on that chassis to get it ready for Simmons' plane. So yeah, it's just Team 18 can't catch a break at the moment, can they, Josh?
No, and they're the team that just deserve a clean run. Like, I mean, you know, like Charlie Schwerkholt and Lee Holdsworth, they've been wondering what they've done to deserve all this bad luck as it just continues their way. And Nick Percat, that crash, you know, really just summed up how poor his start to the year has been, as, you know, he's just, you know, been very much outclassed by Tim Slade at Clipsal, and once again at the Australian Grand Prix, even though Tim Slade did have quite a spectacular puncture blowout at, I think it was the first race of the weekend. Might be wrong, but if not, it was definitely the second. But yeah, just a terrible start to the year for Percat. You know, he needs to do much better this weekend. I'm pretty sure from everything I've heard that car 18 is ready to go right now. So that's good for Team 18 with the car fully repaired right now. Car 8 is currently still, it's been on the jig. You know, its roll cage has been ticked off. It's just got to be rebuilt right now. And they say they will be ready, but, you know, they're kind of close. It's about a 24-hour gap between the car expected to be fully finished and them being on the truck to the Spirit of Tasmania for the ferry trip across the Tasman. So, yeah, expect to see both those cars at Simmons Plains. And, also just a big weekend coming up at Simmons Plains, not for DJ Kim Penske alone, but the whole field, as the Supersoft tyres are going to debut at a championship event, which will be very interesting indeed, especially with the short lap time, which will really monopolize the strategy and just create a range of strategies that we're going to see next weekend. You don't want to be pitting at the wrong time and then find yourself lapped down and effectively ruining your race weekend. And that's just a common theme that's always been a part of Simmons Plains strategies down in Tasmania. However, it will be even more so with the softer compound tyres enforcing more pit stops. So, yeah, it's going to be a great weekend coming up at Simmons Plains with a lot of strategy play and possibly some really good on-track action, as Simmons Plains has always been door-to-door, very close racing.
Yeah, Simmons Plains has always been a great racetrack and something that, and the race can always turn on its head as it did last season. So that pretty much wraps up most of the Australian Grand Prix round of the Supercars calendar. Still not a championship round, though, which is something that they're working on. Apparently, Liberty Media were pretty impressed with the Supercars operation over the weekend, and the Australian Grand Prix corporate is going to be pushing for that to be a championship race. I mean, they've mostly sorted out the broadcast side of things. It's now all shown on the same network, so I don't think there's any problems there. That said, I do think there's probably room for improvement with the format. I'd like to see some longer races. I think what I'd like to see with the support bill is that we sort of get rid of all these random races spread out across the weekend and just focus on two strong key races, maybe on the Friday and the Sunday, where the support bill is a bit light on, etc., and try and get some longer races, possibly with the pit stop strategy coming into that as well, because they do have a pit lane now, so they pretty much have everything they need. It's just, of course, the signing off, and I think if we do get a championship round, I think Supercars will be ready to invest some extra time and to get a more of a presence and make the races longer effectively to bring it in line with the rest of the championship and really put on a good show over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the Australian Grand Prix support bill just needs, you know, more improvement as a whole, because it was only Supercars, Australian GT, and the Porsche Carrera Cup that were actually there last weekend. So, yeah, just I think as a whole, Liberty Media just need to improve the Australian Grand Prix. Also, as well, I think they need to utilize Thursday much more, because the gates don't open on Thursday until about 10:30, and it's only really a half a day. So, that they do need to improve it. That I think Liberty Media will very much listen to the fans and just, you know, push the celebrities. You know, just keep the celebrities caged in the multi-thousand-dollar a day paddock and not on the racetrack, and just leave that to the Supercars, Australian GT, and Porsche Carrera Cup. I'd personally like to see the Formula 4 Championship become a part of the support bill. And Formula 4 is a category that certainly wouldn't mind having short races. Obviously it would tie up very well with the FIA Global Pathway, especially more so that Formula 2 has been put in from what GP2 was last year, now that the pathway is actually complete. You know, on the European side of things, with Formula 4 in Germany, Britain, Denmark even, with it being zone complete there. So it would only add to the global pathway if Formula 4 ran there as well. So, yeah, just on the whole, I think the Australian Grand Prix just needs to be improved. And, I do agree, too. 26-lap races would be much better than what we have now, as the four-race format, you know, just doesn't work. Like, I mean, Supercars tried it at Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. It didn't work. And, I think 26-lap races with tight pit stops, you know, being almost a given. And I think, you know, it would be good for Supercars just to reduce the fuel tank size, to make sure that they actually have to have fuel stop, even though, no matter how long 26 laps is. I'm not sure how much that is in kilometers, but you know, I think just add another spice to the mix in terms of strategy, because Albert Park is a circuit, you know, it's a fantastic circuit in terms of the event itself and the fans and the grandstands and the atmosphere, but the one thing laying it down is the track itself. It's basically one big rectangle with a few squibbles along the side of it. So, yeah, racing's never been fantastic at Albert Park, no matter what category, whether it's Formula 1, Supercars, Australian GT3, or whatever. It's always been a bit mediocre, so that's where the strategy really needs to come in and save the day for a championship event.
Mm. And, of course, that's what didn't really happen with the Formula 1 in the end. It was a pretty dull race. Moving on, another world championship kicked off over the weekend, MotoGP. It was a very, very interesting weekend, particularly because they were racing in Qatar, and they got a bit of rain, actually quite a lot of rain, and unfortunately they've forgotten to build any drainage on the circuit, so qualifying was rained out. There's a great picture of the course car halfway underwater, which pretty much sums up what was going on there. They ended up having to push it on until, I don't even think they managed to run it. I think they had to use the qualifying practice.
Yeah, they used practice times to sort out qualifying.
Yeah, so that was just how weird it was. And, of course, the race was delayed by half an hour, so pretty much by 45 minutes. So good luck to anybody trying to record it on a Monday early morning. But it was certainly a decent, a very good race indeed. The win did go to Maverick Vinales, who sort of surprised everyone by being so strong out of the box with the Yamaha. He won it after an intense duel for victory with the Ducati of Andrea Dovizioso. Another spectacular race, despite the rain delays, we got plenty of action. I think the big man who did steal the show, though, was Johann Zarco, the rookie, who ended up qualifying quite well, fourth on the grid, and then took the lead, went into second in the first corner, and then took the lead on the first lap, and he was leading a MotoGP race in his first race. He was pretty extraordinary, and it was very disappointing to see him end up crashing out at turn two. But other than that, a great debut from him, and shows that MotoGP is alive and well. He had another fantastic duel for the win, Even Valentino Rossi has been up there. He was in third position, surprising everybody with how strong he was, and it looks like we got another cracking season.
Yeah, for sure. And what can you say about Qatar? The MotoGP of Qatar. Like, I mean, you know, the race was, you know, fantastic on a weekend where Formula One, you know, was pretty mediocre. So yeah, MotoGP just doing everything right once again. And Jack Miller, a very solid result for him, finishing in eighth place. Starting off what should be a really good year for him. So yeah, just a very mixed up podium with Valentino Rossi obviously rounding it out. It sets up a very exciting year. And the show moves on to Argentina, and Argentina's always been a pretty good MotoGP race. And what can you say? It's going to be a fantastic year. And even though Maverick Viñales was very impressive last weekend, and you know, was certainly touted as a championship contender in preseason testing, it's far too early to talk about who's the favourite to take out the championship. So yeah, just MotoGP, you know, going from strength to strength, and it's only going to get better as the season goes on.
Indeed, and as well the fact that we saw Marc Marquez still not exactly running away with it. He was fourth, but sort of struggling a bit, which is it's good to see that the Honda isn't as powerful as it was last. Jorge Lorenzo was the big disappointment, though. Even though the Ducati was challenging for the win, his Ducati wasn't struggling to get into the top 10, so not the greatest start from him. And of course, retiring Daniel Petrucci, Andrea Iannone, Alvaro Bautista, Johan Zarco, and Carl Crutch, though, with a shocking race for the Brits, crashing out not once but twice. But yeah, another very solid race from MotoGP. Moving now towards the States and to the world of NASCAR. It's been another great weekend of NASCAR racing. Another new winner, Kyle Larson, who took the win, only his second win with Chip Ganassi at the Auto Club 400. He was effectively now the bridesmaid no longer. He finished second the last 3 weeks, and now he's finally been able to get the win. A good result here for him and for Target Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, Kyle Larson, it was so good for him to see him cross the finish line at Fontana and finally get that breakthrough win that he's been waiting so long for. Like, I mean, most people remember his stunning debut at Fontana in his first full-time season when he was going head-to-head with Kyle Busch for the win, which ultimately he had to concede. So, yeah, Kyle Larson finally broke through and... as I predicted, another interesting race with not a lot of tyre issues this year, but you know, certainly pretty good show. Brad Keselowski and Cliff Boyer ran out the top three, and also another solid finish for Daniel Suarez, who seems to have gotten over his newbie niggles and could potentially land himself in the chase. And Kyle Larson, he was leading points heading into Fontana. He's now almost certain to be a part of the chase, as he was last year. And Kyle Larson, he's only 24 years of age. He's definitely got a very solid 10 years in NASCAR ahead of him at a minimum. So, yeah, like, I mean, the sky's the limit for Kyle Larson. Like, I can definitely see him winning the Monster Energy Cup Series Championship within the next few years. Probably not this year because he's a little bit too raw, and I don't think Chip Ganassi are really ready to go up against Penske and Hendrick and Joe Gibbs week after week after week. However, they gain there, and it's certainly looking very, very promising for Kyle Larson right now, his future. And not much to add. The show moves on. I think it might move on to Phoenix next week. No, that was last round. It moves off of Martinsville. Oh God, for a 500 lap, basically a grudge match really with a lot of door to door action. Racing around the America's answer to the original paperclip compared to Queensland Raceway. Martinsville, always, you know, really tough race for everyone involved. And can certainly throw up quite a few surprise winners since Jeff Gordon, the former master of Martinsville, has retired and is doing the commentary for NASCAR TV. So, yeah, another pretty interesting weekend ahead of Martinsville. And, and the brilliant thing about Martinsville is because it's so short and because it's a 500-lap race, the stage system is, I think it's actually going to have a positive impact on Martinsville and, you know, just prevent, you know, 30 cars going a lap, 2 laps, or even 3 laps down from the leader as a 500-lap screen flag around Martinsville is, it's just asking for a 2-lap race win.
So we're a couple of weeks into the season. You'd have to say we've had some pretty decent races, but I'd still say that NASCAR is having good races in spite of the controversial stage system then because of it. But either way, still another solid NASCAR weekend. Brad Keselowski in second position, Clint Bowyer in third, rounding out the podium at Auto Club Speedway. And it does mean now that Kyle Larson leads at points, 242 points plus 6 heavy playoff points, which he'll take into the chase. Chase Elliott, meanwhile, is also fairly solid, followed by Truex Jr., Brad Keselowski, and Joey Logano. We happy to have two drivers in the top five. So, moving on to the other big series in the United States, IndyCar. They've released some renderings of the 2018 IndyCar Aero Kit, which is the new unified Aero Kit they'll be going with, which you pretty much see out the Dallara DW21 chassis until about 2020. They revealed some renders, and they do look very nice indeed. Basically, the big changes they've gone is they've removed the airbox, they've brought it back to an old, a low-engine cover, very 1990s car slash champ car style. They removed the controversial wheel pods at the back of the car, so it effectively does look very nice and tight indeed. They've got a new... It's kind of difficult, the renders they've done, because they've put a wireframe on top, which shows what it looks like previously. But if you look at it, yeah, they've removed it at the back. They've got another setback rear wing similar to the current generation Formula 1s. Wings, they've got a simplified, they moved the nose back a little bit as well, so it's not as long or as big. It seems in general the move seems to be to sort of debulk, because the current DW21 is very bulky. It's got loads of stuff on it, from the airbox and all the wings flying off it, and it does look a little heavy, but it looks like they're simplifying it down, making it lighter, which will really only improve the racing, I think, because you take less aero off, and any cars do rely on ground effect, so they can take a bit of aero off. You get some very close and very exciting racing. And it does seem in many ways that these new changes are effectively trying to bring back the direction that IndyCar or American Open Wheel Racing would have gone had Champ Car stuck around and the split never happened, which is good to see, although it does make that split all the more futile because they are going to be lost most of their exposure as a result of it. But other than that, it's nice to see IndyCar starting to listen to the fans. And the changes to the car do look to be fairly productive.
Yeah, and all these changes, like, I mean, when it was announced, like, you know, this the changes were much loved, and now everyone's loving it even more. Like, I mean, the car itself looks fantastic. You know, definitely, going back to the Champ Car style low engine cover. I'll always remember going back, down to the Gold Coast as a kid, watching the Champ Cars go around and, like, the engines, and just the noise they made, even though they were 2.2 litre twin turbo V8, I think they were, back in the day, you know, they sounded fantastic and should sound what Formula 1, the new F1 turbos sound like now. Unfortunately, that isn't the case. However, you know, this new, IndyCar, I'm very tempted to say it's a Champ Car, but no, it's an IndyCar. You know, it just looks fantastic. Like the slated, you know, almost diagonal rear wing is, you know, something that, you know, you saw in the very early renditions of the 2018 F1 car, which unfortunately we never got. But yeah, just like that slated rear wing looks really, really good. Even if it, you know, just, you know, becomes straightened up and, you know, just quote unquote normal, you know, it'd still be very good because they still, get rid of all the aero and yeah, just you know, just the brutal simplicity of the car itself, you know, is fantastic. And you know, it looks, you know, very cheap to make. You know, it's a smaller car. You know, it's not gone any, you know, less narrower or wider. You know, you know, the width of the car stayed the same, but it is shorter, which is you know, probably going to be really beneficial for the tighter street courses that IndyCar go to, Long Beach in particular. And you know, just rounding off, you know, it's just, yeah, it looks fantastic. I can't wait for IndyCar in 2018. Like, I just, even though IndyCar is in a very good spot right now for 2017, this just looks so much better, and I just want this. Like, I mean, it's got all the safety enhancements of the DW12, but you know, it just looks so much better, and like the IndyCars and Champ cars of old, and yeah, it's just fantastic right now. You know, the place IndyCar is in, and yeah, just a lot of hard work and a lot of feedback has gone into this car, and it shows. Like, I mean, it's a fantastic looking open wheeler.
Exactly, and if this is just going to be what they're going to do to make the current gen car look more champ car, I can't wait to see what they do in 2020 when they're given a blank canvas to Dallara or whoever supplies the engines. I'd love to see something like the old panels DP01 car that ran 1 year at Champ Car and it was never seen again, which is such a shame because it was such a beautiful, beautiful car and a wonderful, very quick car, although that was designed on street and road courses. They would need to rework it slightly to make it work on an oval. But yeah, very exciting, very good looking, and it's nice to see IndyCar. The Arrival Strength and Strength is one of the best series that nobody is watching. I think we talked earlier about how IndyCar struggled for television ratings, and I'm kind of hoping they made big inroads with reaching out, particularly with their Family Feud episode and James Hinchcliffe's involvement with Dancing with the Stars and things like that. Has got people involved, and there's great characters, great drivers, just in general a great series now that unfortunately nobody's watching, and hopefully these changes go some of the way to sexing it up and making it pretty much look as cool and futuristic as IndyCar should be. Because, of course, it often does struggle with comparisons to F1, but in recent years, I'd argue to say they're as good looking as the F1 cars and pretty much on par, you would have to say. Speaking of open wheelers, there is another open wheel race kicking off over the weekend. The Mexico E-Prix. Now, before we talk about that, a new layout was unveiled for the Berlin E-Prix, which has been a bit all around the place. It was at Tempelhof Airport for the first year on a rather cookie cutter sort of apron layout, at which point last year they couldn't run it there because of some other political stuff going on. It was a refugee camp, so they ran in the city and on a track that I thought was actually quite nice. And they moved it back to Tempelhof Airport. They've got a new layout, which is a really interesting one, very twisty. In fact, turn one is a 270-degree corner, very similar to turn one at China. And that's with the Formula E car. There's going to be a lot of carnage going on there, Josh.
Yeah, for sure, and the best part of it is that turns 2 and 3 look very, very tight. You know, they're two 90-degree left-handers, and like, you know, left 90-degree corners are spoken about quite negatively with newer circuits, but you know, because of the 270-degree turn one, you know, it only enhances it. And then again, like, I mean, you know, there will be cars wanting to go side by side because of, you know, just the passing opportunity that will inevitably happen at turns 3 and 4, with the long straight, into the very wide, track section in turn 6. And then just the rest of the circuit looks, pretty good. You know, and, hopefully it does live up to, the city circuit, that was used last year. And, like, I mean, there are a few people unsure about it. And, I personally think, you know, if a track works, then, you know, keep using it, which was the case, of the Berlin E-Prix City Circuit. But, you know, this looks promising. And, it'll be interesting to see, how guys like Sebastian Buemi, really take a hold of it as, yeah, it looks promising, and like, I mean, I do like the idea of of a circuit, you know, being right in front of what's almost basically a 180-degree circuit-wide grandstand. I definitely do like that idea in theory. Yeah, so very interesting to see how this one plays out. I hope for its sake that it does, as it's got a very interesting pit lane as well, going off at turn 9 of 10, having two left-handers before the pit lane itself, and then having a mini turn 1 of its own as at the pit exit just before the start-finish line. So, yeah, it's a quirky little circuit, and hopefully it goes well.
Mm, and airport circuits generally have a good track record in the past. I mean, we've got St. Petersburg, which runs through an airport down an airport runway, and of course the famous Cleveland Champ Car circuit, which was insane because of how wide it was and how quick it was. But yeah, Formula E generally has a good track record of being good anywhere. So it'll certainly be exciting. They returned to Mexico, a track which was a bit undecided last year because they pretty much had to slow it down and run a lot of chicanes, but it's great to see putting a motorsport in Mexico, and I think it will be very exciting indeed, particularly as, of course, Esteban Gutierrez's debut with Takita will be one to watch, and hopefully he'll be able to bring out the fans. There'll be plenty going on off the track as well, we think. BMW granted manufacturer status out a little over a week ago, and more moves than McLaren might be open to opening Formula E, of course. Entering Formula E, certainly be much better than their effort in Formula 1, you have to say. So that could possibly be a good fit. But yeah, this is another series that is just going up and up, and I'm hoping that now that the sort of, it's still got an unsteady calendar, but it looks far more stable than other series which have had unsteady calendars in the past. And yeah, in general, really excited to see what it brings this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And the big question is, can anyone catch Sebastian Buemi and stop him going to 4 from 4 wins at Mexico this weekend? And yeah, it's gonna be like qualifying's gonna be pretty crucial for Formula E this weekend and all his challenges. And but once again, you know, you just have to keep in mind that he won't be at the New York E-Prix later in the year because of his commitments at the Nürburgring for the 24-hour race there, I think it is. Oh, it might be the World Endurance Championship race there. So, yeah, even though Buemi's got a very handy lead over everyone else, it's still far from over at the moment. But a win for Buemi at Mexico would definitely be a very big step towards clinching the Formula E crown at Montreal later this year.
Mm, indeed. So, that pretty much wraps up all we've got time for this week. Next week, we will be, of course, previewing F1 in China. Will the new regulations finally get a chance to breathe and show us that we can produce exciting racing? We'll have to wait and see. Also, the supercars will take part in their first sprint round of the season at Siemens Plains. Of course, the sprint rounds are where you do win this championship, so how every team will go will be of incredible importance and of incredible interest. And, of course, the Grand Prix of Long Beach, one of IndyCar's premier events, other than the Indy 500, that'll be on next weekend as well. We'll see you next week then to talk all of that. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.